obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
My name's Maureen, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm trying to remember what I said I was going to do. So first, I want to thank Heather for asking me to come and participate today and the committee. And I want to let everybody know that there's a lot of work. If you've never worked on a roundup, there's a lot of time and effort that goes into this to make sure that everything is here for you to have a great weekend. So if you don't, it's your own fault, you know? And if you need to learn how to have fun, see one of these people here. Because, see, they're smiling. They're having a good time doing this, you know? So I hope that you really enjoy yourself this weekend, because it really is a lot of fun. And then I would like to thank those of you that got a babysitter, got off work early, did the things, and my poor husband who puts up with me, to be here today to support me. I want you to know I really appreciate it a lot. It means a lot to me. I'm going to close this so I can focus. And Eugene, what the hell are you doing here, Eugene? I mean, this is like, I'm watching people come through the door and April is here. I could probably start crying before I ever start talking. You know, my sobriety date is December 21st, 1973. And for that, I am eternally grateful. My home group is It's For You at Navy Base Port Hueneme that meets Saturday at noon. If we're here and disaster has not befallen us, we are at that meeting on Saturdays. I have a sponsor. My sponsor's name is Kathy F., and she lives out in Victorville, and she just celebrated April 1st, 49 years of sobriety. I call my sponsor once a week, whether I need to or not. I'm telling you all this so to give you an idea of how important Alcoholics Anonymous is to me. I don't take this lightly. This is about my life, saving my life, and the life of so many people in my family. It's very, very important. I take it seriously. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have fun. Anybody that knows me knows that I absolutely insist on enjoying life. So let me tell you a little bit about myself. I started drinking when I was 13, and it was at a party. And it was a Halloween party, and the adults, who were like 30, mind you, I was 13, they had made this concoction called Green Death. And it was white wine and vodka with green food coloring and these big metal bins, you know, those big metal tubs with dry ice in them, so it was all foaming, you know, all this. And I scooped my little cup in there, and I drank that first glass, and nothing traumatic happened at all. And it was gone pretty quickly, to my surprise. And so I went and scooped up another one, and nothing happened, and that was gone again pretty quickly. And so I scooped up another one, and I don't know what happened. I have no, to this day, I have no recollection. I do remember one thing, and that was one of the older ladies who was probably 30, said, this is what she said, "Maureen, Maureen, the Queen Maureen." And I knew I had arrived. Someone finally saw my value. And the next morning, everybody told me how much fun I was and how much fun I had. and I couldn't tell you either one. But I knew that I was going to do that again. It was a lot of fun, they told me. I was raised in this nice Irish Catholic home that had a mother and two sisters and a very large extended family. And there was always drinking in our, always. No, I didn't care what, it didn't matter what holiday it was, there was alcohol around. And but I had never drank before. I don't know that I can honestly tell you that at that moment I became an alcoholic. I don't know that that's true. I just know that I couldn't wait to do it again. And so one of the ways I got out of that nice Catholic home was to clean the convent on Saturdays so that I didn't have to be at home with them. So I would go clean the convent, and then the nuns loved me because I was cleaning the convent. And then I would leave there and go to my girlfriend's house where I got drunk the first time and proceed to get drunk again. And then go home on Sunday and couldn't wait for the next weekend. I graduated from high school when I was 16 and immediately got a job because I had no desire to do any more school, absolutely none. And I got a job with an advertising agency, and they drank a lot. They were just my kind of people, you know? And I turned 17 the day after I graduated, so I was 17, hanging out with all these older people and going to their parties, and they were involved with the Circle Arts Theater down in San Diego. So I got to meet lots of celebrities, and I was living high. And I stayed at home until the day after I turned 18, and the day after I turned 18, I moved away from home. Like half a mile. I don't want to get too far in case I needed that old woman for something, you know? And I really did enjoy myself. I really did. I had a driver's license that I had to lie to get because my mother wouldn't give me my birth certificate. And one of my jobs was when a celebrity came to town, I had to drive them to their interviews, you know, TV interviews. And so I got to meet Frankie Avalon, and one of my favorites was Johnny Mathis. Hi, honey. So I really enjoyed myself immensely. And they all drank, and so it was, they just took me wherever they were going, and I drank right along with them. One of those drunks was before I was 18, and I turned up pregnant, and I just couldn't figure out how that had happened, because shouldn't you have some recollection? And I really didn't have much of any. He's now 50. And I can tell you that when I found, I was quite far along when I finally figured out that that was the problem and the doctor had to tell me. I was just in shock. And I can tell you that I made an effort to not drink as much. You know, we didn't, this is in 1965, so we didn't know that alcohol causes problems with babies, you know? So I did make an effort, and part of the reason I made the effort was because when I drank, I fell down a lot. Because I was usually so shit-faced, I couldn't walk right. Not because I was clumsy, you know? And so I made a conscious decision to kind of slow down. And I had this little boy, and I want you to know he was absolutely, he's just precious. He had a full head of black hair, and he was just so cute. And in 1965, not a lot of women who weren't married kept their babies. They gave them up for adoption. And I knew I wasn't going to do that. But they didn't bring him to me in the hospital because that's what they did with unwed mothers. They don't bring their babies. They take them and you don't ever see them again. Can you imagine? I just couldn't imagine doing that. So they finally brought him to me, and I remember him laying in that bed with me and me swearing to him that it was him and me against the world, and I was going to be the best mommy he could ever have, and I was going to take really good care of him. And I want you to know I meant every word of it. With every ounce of my being, I really meant every word. I didn't have a clue how I was going to do that, but I meant every word of it. And I proceeded to stay sober till he was a long time. He was 4 months old before I found it necessary to have a drink because, you know, who was I? Maybe it was Stacy I was talking to this morning. That the difference between me and the other guy is that if there is a problem, I need to have a drink in order to solve it. And if there's a reason to celebrate, I need to have a drink in order to celebrate it. And the rest of the world doesn't think that way. Well, you do, obviously. But they don't think that way. But that's the way I think, you know. So no matter what it was, if it was a sad thing I drank, if it was a glad thing I drank. And pretty soon I started having problems with people. I didn't have problems with the alcohol, but with people. Like, my mother wasn't real pleased with my behavior. And I had two uncles, and they weren't real pleased with my behavior. And so my solution to the problem was to get married. Maybe that would make them happy. So I don't know where you find your husbands, but I find mine in bars. And that's where I found him. And I got married when I was 20. And I don't think he quite understood the role that he was assigned. Because he wanted things like dinner. Dinner, for God's sakes. He wanted me to be home. And you know, I have a theme song. It's I love the nightlife, I want a boogie. And I was a bar drinker, and I love everything about the bars, especially the seedy people, you know, I really like that. But he wanted me home, and he wanted clean clothes, and he worked for IBM, and they wore nothing but white shirts. And we were married for about 3 weeks. This is what I used to be like, folks, okay? And I went into his closet, and I counted him. He had 52 shirts that he wanted washed, starched, and ironed. And I looked at him and told him he needed to find somebody to do that kind of stuff because that just wasn't in my repertoire of wife stuff, you know. So he did. He took him back to his mother. She took care of those damn shirts for him. But we had other problems because he wanted me to be home. And I had friends and I had places to go and things to do, and you know, I really needed to have fun, didn't he understand? So I would leave work and go with my friends we went to the river a lot, to the Colorado River. And I knew that if I called him and asked him, I was going to get a ration. So don't call. I mean, it's not rocket science here. So I would call him Saturday and tell him I was at the river and I'd be home tomorrow. Because see, he should have understood that I had a 2-year-old boy that I couldn't take to the river with me. And I needed him to take care of him so that I could go to the river. Well, that marriage lasted till I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, actually. He must have been really sick, is the only thing I can think of. You know, because I wouldn't put up with that for 2 seconds, you know. My husband will tell you, I don't put up with much. And my drinking got progressively worse because I was untethered, you know. I just didn't... Alcohol for me turned off the care button. I knew I belonged at home with that little boy. I knew I belonged at home with that husband. I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to do those things. And if I was drinking, I just didn't care anymore. It just turned off the care button. So I didn't have to care that they were unhappy or anything. So when I was 27, I had already attempted suicide because of these people, if they would just leave me alone. And that was the only way I knew to get rid of them and get them off my back, was if they felt sorry for me, that maybe they would leave me alone. So I had this, I was on suicide watch a number of times. And after the third attempt, my uncle came to me, Uncle Harold came to me. And he had been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, this AA thing. And I had AA people at my house all the time because he used to bring them over. You know, they were nice people, but I don't need them, you know. And he told me after this last suicide attempt that he wanted me to go to a meeting with him because these people were going to teach me how to live. I don't want what you have. I'm 27 years old. What could you possibly have that I need? But I never told, I will tell, this is God's, I never told either one of my uncles no my entire life, ever. So he told me that he would pick me up on Monday. So I went and bought a new outfit. And he took me to my first meeting. And I remember nothing, absolutely nothing, except I went. I know nothing. But the next night, he told me he'd pick me up for, there's a question and answer meeting, he'd pick me up for that meeting, so I went and bought another new outfit. Because you can't go in the same clothes, you know. So I went to that meeting, and it was a question and answer meeting, and these two guys were yelling and screaming at one another in the meeting. And the only thing that impressed me about that meeting was, see, at my house, when people yelled and screamed at one another, the cops came. The cops came to Christmas, Easter, because my family was volatile. And nobody called the cops. And nobody threw them out. And that impressed me. But that's all I remember about that meeting. So he told me the next night the meeting was a beginner's meeting, and he picked me up at 7 o'clock. So I had to go buy another new outfit. And I went to the meeting, and there were younger people there. I mean, when I got sober, everybody looked like my husband. Do you know what I mean? And my attitude was pretty much, if I looked that bad, I would quit drinking too, you know? I mean, they were old. So I went to this newcomers meeting, and there were some younger people there, and one of them happened to catch my eye. And he was like 6'2", and had blonde hair and blue eyes, very buff. And the only thing I heard at that meeting was, if you want what we have, keep coming back. And you had him, so I was coming back. Not rocket science, you know. So Thursday, he told me he'd pick me up for the meeting, and I went and bought another new outfit because now, of course, I have somebody to impress, really impress. And by the time that meeting was over, I knew his name was Grady. He was there on a court card because he'd gotten a DUI. At the time, they were called 502s. And he had to go to 30 meetings in 30 days. Well, I didn't see a problem with that. I could do 30 meetings in 30 days. And I did that. I went to 30 meetings in 30 days for no other. I did not want what you have. I didn't want anything to do with you. But you had Grady. And at the end of 30 days, I had 30 new outfits. and I hadn't had a drink. I have never seen Grady again. And I'm still here. So when they say it's in the rooms, that's what they're talking about. Recovery's in the rooms. You don't get it sitting out at the bar, you know, if you're in a club. You don't get it out there. It's in the rooms. And the things that I heard in there, because most of the women were real low-bottom drunks. You know, they were from Skid Row, and they had lost their kids. They were divorced. I mean, I was getting a divorce, but it was okay because I didn't want to be married anyway. It was way too much work. And so whenever I had never been to jail. I hadn't lost a job. I had money in the bank. I had a company car. On the outside, everything looked really good. But when I started listening to you, it's like, well, one of the first things that caught my ear was George Friend talking about going to a family function and walking in with your entire family and knowing you don't belong. And oh my God, that's the way I felt my whole life. And then they talked about not being able to guarantee my behavior after I took the first drink. Well, that had been going on forever. I didn't know that was a problem. I just thought that kind of went with the territory. You know what I mean? If you're going to drink, forget it. You're not going to be able to keep any kind of commitment, marriage or otherwise. And I started getting that identification that happens. And those women would tell me, you need to start adding yet to all of these differences you're coming up with. Because you're only 27, we're in our 40s. You got a ways to go. And all those things can happen to you. Well, I didn't want to lose my son. I loved him terribly. I didn't want to lose him. I didn't know how to take care of him, but I didn't want to lose him. And I didn't want to lose my job. Oh my God, my self-esteem was so wrapped up in my job, there was no way I could lose that. And so I started paying attention. So Grady left and I'm still here. And when I was about 90 days sober, I had gotten a sponsor because that's what they told me to do. I had not a clue what that meant. But she was divorced and had a son, and that was good enough for me, you know, and she wasn't drinking. So when I was about 90 days sober, I was bored out of my mind, just bored. You know, when you've been doing this running for how many years? In 14 years, life is pretty boring sober. You know, you're so addicted to chaos and whatnot. And I called her and said, maybe I'm really not an alcoholic. And she goes, oh, honey, let me tell you. I'll never forget this. She said to me, when's the last time your son went to school in a dirty uniform? And I said, well, he hasn't because you make me do the wash every week. When is the last time he went to bed without dinner? Well, I feed him every night because that's what you told me I had to do before I go to the meeting. This was one of my best memories. It was a Friday night, and after a while I tried to get home on Friday night because I couldn't pick him up from the babysitter during the week. It just wasn't convenient. You know, I would go to the bar and it would be 9 o'clock and it's too late to take him home now. So I just leave him there. But I really made an effort to pick him up on Fridays. But I also picked up my bottle of Tanqueray gin too. And one particular Friday night, I came to, it must have been like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I walked out into the living room and all the lights are on. And he's in his school uniform. And he's asleep on the floor in the living room. And in front of him is a box of cornflakes with a bowl. And what he'd had for dinner is dried cornflakes. Now, I don't share with you that I'm proud of this, but it's my responsibility to tell you what I used to be like. And that's what my son had for dinner, was that dried cornflakes. I went into orbit, scared him to death because I started yelling and screaming, "What is wrong with you?" Only I'm not yelling and screaming right now, but I was yelling and screaming. I pay good money for those uniforms, not for you to lay around in the living room floor in them. You're supposed to take blah, 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 blah. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, he's getting up and going to bed and crying because he's screwed up again. So I don't ever want to forget that.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
I don't ever, ever, ever want to forget that, because I don't ever have to do that again to anybody, and especially to my grandchildren now. I don't never have to do that. So she told me all these things, and then she said to me, you may not need to stay sober, but your son deserves to have a sober mother. Well, that just is not fair. You know what I mean? Guilt is a horrible thing to use on me. Just a horrible thing. So I was like, okay, I'll do this one more day. One more day, I'll do this one more day. But when you're addicted to chaos, you gotta have chaos. You know what I mean? Somehow, some way, you gotta create it. And mine usually centered around a man. So I found next in a men's recovery house when I had 4 months of sobriety. And of course they tell you don't get emotionally involved in your first year, and I figured that was for losers, you know what I mean? Not somebody who had it all together like me. And I was special. And so I found this, another 6'2", blonde, blue eyes, big guy. Wore a size 13 ring, you know, just a big, if you're going to pick somebody who's to have a chaotic relationship with, you need somebody who's big and mean. Those are kind of the prerequisites. And he was both those things. And he was in a recovery house, and when he had 30 days, I moved him out of the recovery house and into my house. Now, when I talked to my sponsor today, she has not been my sponsor my entire sobriety, but she has known me my entire sobriety. So she said, when you tell them that your first 14 years reads like most people's drunk logs, tell them they need to believe you. I saw more cops in my first 14 years than I ever saw sober. Totally. I was absolutely stark, raving, sober, crazier than a loon. And I did everything that they told me to do with a few exceptions. Like, don't get emotionally involved in your first. You don't tell that to an alcoholic because they're emotionally involved with a pencil that doesn't write. Do you know what I mean? You know what I mean? They're emotionally involved with mascara that won't do what it's supposed to do. You can go into orbit. And I was no different, just into orbit. I had an electric lawnmower, which means it was electric. You had to plug it in. And my 8-year-old is supposed to be mowing the lawn. I don't know, it was springtime, and I got sober in December, so... You know, he was probably 9 at that time. And he was out there mowing the front lawn, and he ran over the cord. Oh, I started yelling and screaming and carrying on. And I went in because, you know, my sponsor made me call her every day. Like, every day I had to call her. So it was automatic now for me to call her. So I called her and I told her what had happened. And she said, well, we'll be right over. But for the time being, can you unplug it? Because that never occurred to me that you might want to do that. So I went out and unplugged it. And very shortly, this little blue Volkswagen Beetle pulled up in front of the house with Don Babb and George Friend. And I mean, they just kept getting out of this car. There was like six of them in this. They just kept coming out of the car. They put it all back together, you know. They wired or whatever they did to put it all back together. And went about their business. And I remember thinking, well, what happens the next time? Who's going to do this the next time? I need to get a man because I'm not going to do this stuff. You know? So anyway, enter in Lyle. And poor Lyle, he really didn't know what he had. And we went on an excursion to beat all excursions. We were both 86th out of the Alano Club a number of times, you know, for bad behavior. Bad behavior, me. And we got married because that was going to fix everything that was wrong with both of our lives at that point. So we got married, and 3 weeks later he was drunk. And if he found me, he was going to kill me. He made sure everybody knew that. So we did more chaos. And he got sober again. And when he had 30 days, of course, I brought him back home because that's where he belonged. And the grass was getting long. And 30 days later, we were shopping in the store for dinner, for groceries for the week. And I went by the meat department, and I love pork chops. And I used to buy them every week. And I looked at the pork chops. I was sicker than a dog just looking at them. And I looked at him and said, oh, my God, I'm pregnant. And I was, you know. It's like, oh, my, I'm going to bring a baby into this insanity. Well, of course I did. What else do you do, you know? Well, that baby, at the end of this month, she's going to be 39. And we were together. I left him when I was 7 months pregnant, and by the grace of God, I never went back again, thank God. But that didn't stop. You know, I don't want you to think that I just did steps 1 and 12, because I didn't. I was working really hard at trying to change my life. I really was. I just didn't have a clue how sick I was. And I was willing to, I made a decision to turn my life over to the care of God, as long as he met a few simple requests. You identify with that? I mean, I just had a few simple things. And every time those things didn't happen, it's like, who needs this God? He's not doing anything for me. And I have shared this with a number of people. Step 7 says, the prayer says that I'm willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I pray that you now remove every single defect of character that stands in the way of me getting what I want. Well, you're laughing. Does that mean that's not what it says, right? Well, that's the way I read it. And so when I didn't get what I mean, who would ever stop to think that I'm supposed to be useful to God and my fellows? I will be when I get mine. And when I get mine, then I'll worry about helping you get yours. But don't you know, I already know what yours is going to be and what it should be. So when I was like 14 years old, I got married again to Mr. AA, and that one didn't work out well either. Surprise. And when I was about 14 years sober, I was working in LA, and I worked on the 14th floor. And I was sitting in my office looking out the window, And this is what I said. God, I hate the fact that I have to have you in my life. But I'm not going to be able to do this without you. Because I don't know how. I don't know why you've left me here. Because I don't know how to do this. And that was the God's honest truth. I didn't have a clue how to do this. And my life has never, ever, ever gone back to that. Ever. Not even for a day. This is where I get teary. If you have not felt the despair of a sober alcoholic, I don't know what to tell you. Be grateful, because the despair, that's why I had to drink, is because I could not stand living sober. I just couldn't stand it. I haven't felt that way for a really long time, really long time. I'm also grateful for that. I stay in the middle of the herd. You've heard that. I stay in the middle of the herd. I do call my sponsor. I don't throw her away. I don't like everything she says to me. Still, to this day, I don't like everything she says to me. But I finally got it, that she only has my best interests at heart. It's not for herself she's telling me these things. It's because she really cares about what happens to me and about how I'm doing. Anyway, I got very busy in Alcoholics Anonymous doing what the black part in the book says. Because, see, I kept filling in all the white parts with Maureen's ideas. I got very busy with the black part. And in step 7, where it says that I am to take away those defects of character that stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. And I had not been very useful at all. So, how am I doing? I got 15 minutes, actually about 10 minutes. To tell you what's happened between then and now. And oh my gosh, there's just too much to even begin to tell you. So I'll give you some highlights. I left Covina and moved to Thousand Oaks just before I turned 15 years sober. And my sponsor told me that I had to take the first commitment that opened up, because I was gonna meet a lot of assholes and alcoholics out here. And I needed to have a commitment so I would go back. So I took a commitment as a general service rep for the meeting that I went to. And they asked me, so I went to that every month. And mind you, I have this now, this daughter that's 14 and in high school, and my son is away in the Air Force. And they asked me at General Service if I would be the liaison with the Ventura County Convention. And, you know, I truly do try not to say no to an AA request, so fine, I'll do that. So I walked into the wagon wheel, and I had been single. I had done my 40 days in the desert, we call it, and I had been single for 3 years, which is a long time for me. You know, it was a long time. And I walked into the wagon wheel, and there was this guy in there, and he just had this, had this shitting grin on his face, and he just watched me most of the night. And I remember I had brought somebody with me, and I said, what the hell's wrong with him? And he came up and introduced himself to me afterwards. Let's see, I'll cry again. And I went home that night, and I called my sponsor, and I asked her whether or not she knew who this person was, and she told me no. And I said, well, he's kind of cute. So I went to the meeting the next month, and he came up and talked to me again, And somebody came up afterwards and said something about his wife being the Al-Anon chairman, and I thought, you son of a bitch, you know, talking to me. And I went home and I called my sponsor and I said, he's married. And she said, well, do you like him enough to keep him as a friend? And I said, yes. And she said, well, then that's what you do. Well, we've been married 20 years now. And I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I really do. My daughter and I were talking about that today. She, most of you know my husband is Choice, and he's been her stepdad and her only dad for a long time, since she was like 16 years old. And when she was going to get married, she asked Choice if he would perform the ceremony. So some of you may think my husband's rather an idiot, and there's days I agree with you 100%. But I want to tell you some of the things he's done for my family and for me. And when our girls, because we have, see, I'm not going to be able to do this without crying. We have children between us, and our children have never, ever, ever experienced sibling rivalry. You know what I mean? They've always gotten along really, really well and been very close to one another. And when the girls graduated from high school, we were going to Italy to watch our son, Christopher, swim in the Olympics. And Choice decided that he was going to take all of our kids to Italy to watch Christopher. So we had the opportunity to spend 2 weeks with our kids in Rome, you know, and share that experience with them. We had an apartment, and we were watching the kids walk down the street. We were going to get gelato. And he looked at me and he goes, this is costing us a fortune. And I said, I know. And he goes, but what a way to spend our money. Look at them. You know, when I was 60, I started having health problems. So I'm standing here a miracle. And I have, I've had lung cancer. I've had a heart attack. And as a result of a bunch of other things, I've had 7 fractures in my back. I'm standing, mind you. I've been standing for like 40 minutes already. And we've just had a lot of health. And most of you know my husband's now on a walker and oxygen. And he's got vascular dementia, and he can't hear. And you heard that lady that they accused her of beating her husband to death with a coffee cup? And they arrested her, but they couldn't prove it. So on particularly bad days, somebody will call me and I say, oh, today's one of the days where you need to come get the coffee cups. You know that? I'm not a nurse. I'm not a nurse, April. I'm not a nurse. I hate sick people. I just have, they're needy. You know what I mean? They need things. And yet, I take care of him. And we went to the doctor a week ago, and I asked him how he thought Choice was doing. And he said, well, you're taking too good care of him. He's doing really good. And it's like, okay, I'm doing what I'm supposed to. See, I'm not capable of that, of people. I'm not capable. I don't take care of people like that. I don't make sure they go to the doctor. I don't make sure that they take their medicine. I don't even make sure that the little thing is full of the pills. You know, that isn't who I am. Of myself, that isn't who I am. Last year, on a Sunday morning, I got a call from my stepdaughter that our son had been killed while he was out training for a marathon that he was going to run. Just surreal. And you know what? Besides my own anguish, because I've had this baby since he was 16, was that I was going to have to go tell his father. I just didn't have a clue where in the hell am I going to get that courage? Because it was going to take courage. Because, see, when things like this happen, I want to drink. You know, I don't want to do this stuff. So I had a bright idea. And I called Jimmy McDonald, a really good friend of ours, and I told Jimmy, and I said, you need to come over because I have to tell him, and I don't know how he's going to do. You know, he's not all that well anyway. And Jimmy came over, and I told him, as the week progressed and we found out more information about this little girl that was behind the wheel, she's 23 years old, and she was loaded on Xanax and something else, been up all night. And every single thing that anybody ever shared with me about losing a child just came all flooding in. And God bless Frank Gehry, Frank and Lynn Garrity, and Lori Hopkins, and all those that have gone before me, Linda. They've gone before us and showed us how you walk through this stuff, you know, how you walk through it and you don't drink. And one of the greatest gifts that I have been given is the ability to forgive. Forgiveness is a big deal, people. It's a big deal. And all I could think of was, this poor little girl at some point is going to turn up in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, she's got a problem. It's 6 in the morning, loaded. And I admonished our friends that you need to be there for her. When she shows up, you need to be there for her. I don't think Joyce and I are going to be able to help her. I don't think she would want help from us. But I need you to be there for her. I need you to show her that there is forgiveness for her. That God does not hold grudges. And as a result, we live really happy, joyous, and free. Does that mean that we have kids, we have grandkids, we have friends, we have problems, you know what I mean? We have day-to-day problems. We have health issues. We have stuff. But nothing is ever so bad that a drink won't make worse. God is infinitely the most important part of my life is my relationship with God. Behind that comes fitting myself to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. Thank you again very much for coming out, and thank you again for asking.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.